Hey everyone, let's talk about the five worst research habits kids have and how to fix them. Welcome to the Workshop Teacher Podcast, a podcast for teachers who are interested in trying workshop in their classrooms and teachers who are obsessed with it, like me. Teachers love free stuff. Teachers deserve free stuff. If you go to amandarightnow.com and you click the big button at the top of the page, actually it's kind of in the middle of the page, it just says begin learning. You will be taken to a page all about the Workshop Teacher School. Registration starts now. For 5 weeks, one Friday each week, I will be coming on live. And you have to sign up because it's a webinar. What's a webinar? A webinar is a live video event. It's private though, so whoever attends, you have to sign up to attend. It's live. There's a chat feature so you can talk to other reading and writing workshop teachers around the world. And so for five Fridays in June, starting June 14th, I am going to be talking about the following topics. Week one, how to get started with workshop and why workshop is the very best way to teach reading and writing, in my opinion, and probably your opinion too, if you're listening to this podcast. Week two, fitting everything in, how to teach both reading and writing workshop. It's hard to do it all. So I'm going to talk about how you can. Week three is all about student engagement and motivation, and I'm going to give you strategies that work, that actually motivate your students. Week four is how to simplify your assessment systems. And week five, I'm going to help you plan your entire year-long curriculum planning. If this all sounds awesome to you, then you need to sign up right now. I don't care. Go ahead, leave, stop listening right now. Go to amandarightnow.com, click the button that says begin learning, and scroll down, sign up. I'm so excited. So in the last episode, I talked about why you're probably teaching information writing wrong. And I referred to a post that I wrote a while ago called The Five Worst Research Habits Students Have and How to Fix Them. So I thought this would be an obvious next episode. Researching online is easier than ever, but thoughtlessness is easier than ever too, right? Classrooms are transforming. They're spending more and more time learning online. This is why it is so vital that we read articles like this. And I have a link to the article that I'm referring to. It's called Where do fake news generators come from? And just clickbait. And there's so many links in this article that you should definitely check out. We need to be talking about this stuff with our students. We need to think about and question our online habits. Here you're going to find the five bad habits that I see my students exhibiting. And there's more than just this, for sure. So you should totally go to amandarightnow.com, click podcast, and go to this episode, scroll down, and put some comments in this post, because I'd love to hear about the worst habits that you notice your students have. So the number one, well, I don't think this is the number one worst habit, but it's just the first one that I'm going to talk about. So the worst habit, one of the worst habits, is have students using vague search terms. So when you give students a choice about what they write, they often pick general topics and end up writing uninteresting or rambling drafts. Furthermore, students who want to write about soccer, Google soccer. It's a very vague term. And they're overloaded and overwhelmed with information. So we need to teach students how to narrow their topic and search. The best way that I found to do this is through lists. First, have students list as many broad topics as they can possibly think of. So topics they might want to write an information article about. Soccer, music, cooking, biking, TV shows, lions, how to make YouTube videos, writing fantasy stories. And then have students pick one thing from that list and then write questions about that thing. So let's start with soccer. How do you play? What are the positions? Who are the best players? What does it take to be a forward? What do referees do? What does it take to go pro? So these are all questions. Like, a student could write an information article about just one of these, not all of them. Next, have students use these questions to search Google. A search question such as, how do you play soccer, leads to a website that includes terms like ball control, dribbling, passing, and shooting, which is really, really helpful because if a student wants to write about how to play soccer, which is a pretty broad topic, actually, then they can use each of those topics to organize their paragraphs. Finally, model using these more specific terms to search Google yet again. Ball control, dribbling, passing, shooting. So you can use those terms to search Google again. So how do you control the soccer ball? How do you dribble a soccer ball? With these methods, students can write a more targeted information piece and find what they're looking for much easier. The second habit. It can be quite annoying to see students copying down info from the first answer Google provides and moving on without clicking into the web page, because Google provides answers, right? Right on that front page. Google makes it incredibly easy to find answers right on the search results page. This is very convenient, but it's also sometimes a disservice to kids who need to learn how to question where the source came from. I hate when students cite Google as their source. Google is not a source, kids. It is a search engine. And you should totally make that a poster. You know what? I'm going to make that a poster. I'm going to make it a poster and I'm going to put it on this post. So by the time you're listening to this, it is going to be a fancy poster that you can print out and you can hang it in your room. Google is not a source. It is a search engine. So before I go into fixing this bad habit, it is important to remember there's a reason Google has ranked that website first and has put that as the answer. It is the most relevant result pertaining to the keyword or question searched. So if students find their search results in an answer form, that means the search question was specific enough, which is good, to get such a specific answer. A search for how to do an ollie on a skateboard leads to this result. And I have a picture of what the result looks like. And I feel like analyzing this with your students is so powerful, looking at this result and pointing out all the pieces of it. Okay. So it says, check out Simon's step-by-step guide to landing an ollie on your skateboard. And it has pictures. And this is just on the search page without even clicking the link yet. And then it has step one, step two, step three. It also, in tiny letters at the bottom in green, it shows the website and where this information is coming from. And I love pointing out that green URL and making sure students know, okay, where is this information coming from? It's that green URL. So if you search the word ollie, it doesn't lead to this answer from Google. So, like I said, the way to fix this is model searching using specific questions, not just words like ollie. Clicking on the link in green font to learn more. Who is responsible for this answer? Explain that spreading misinformation in our classroom and online is not right. This is why we always need to check our information and where it's coming from. Explicit modeling and roaming the room, observing what students are doing while researching, can go a long way. Teach students that the first results are usually ads, show them how to identify the little green box around the ad title. This may seem obvious to us, but for students, sometimes it's important to point these details out. All right, number three. Oh man, this might be the worst one. And I have to be honest, I am kind of guilty of this. Not reading. I find students often want to rush through the research process so they can start creating. Students love art. They love making things. Don't we all? I've often launched and assigned a research project and sent students off to begin writing, only to find them playing with the fonts in their Google Slides. Ugh. The fix designates specific time frames for students to play with the design of their information presentation or the pictures in their information books. So time frames that are silent research and read time. You should only see students reading, and sometimes it helps to print the actual articles out and put the computers away. Students need silent time to read and process what they're reading, and then reward students with extra design time, quote unquote, if they can research and read silently for 10 minutes straight. I love rewarding students with art after they've done some hard research and reading. All right, the fourth. And you know what? Also teaching students how to skim articles is really, really important. Before I go into the fourth bad habit, I think it's important to show students how we skim articles and how we think about, is this an article that I really want to take the time to read through? Or is this an article I just want to skim and then move on to the next one? And I think it's important to teach our students how to figure out, like, is this article written at a level I can actually understand? Because if it's too advanced and there's way too much information, I think skimming is just fine and then moving on to the next article. All right, the fourth bad habit is taking wordy notes. Students who are taking notes on the computer often want to type word for word from the source, But this does not lead to learning. Also, students who exhibit habit number three and aren't reading are more likely to copy notes verbatim too. Students need to learn how to summarize their learning with keywords. The fix for this habit is simple. Make students handwrite their notes. There are many benefits to handwriting notes, and actually I have a link to an article about how powerful handwriting notes is and how it actually helps students retain learning. And you can prove this to students by saying, you know, if they moan and groan that they can't type their notes, prove it to them. Show them these research studies that have been done that prove that taking notes by hand actually helps you retain your learning better. So students are more likely to read if they have to handwrite the main ideas from their reading. They're also less likely to copy straight from the article into a Google Doc, you know, like highlighting an entire paragraph, copying and pasting it. So modeling how to take notes is so important. And actually, I have a picture to four types of note-taking methods, and I used one article and I took notes using four different methods on that one article. So I took notes using the Cornell method. I took notes using SketchNotes. I took notes using a bulleted list. I annotated the article, which is another form of taking notes. And I did a mind map. So actually I used five methods of note taking. So there's a picture of that in this post. And then I'm also planning on publishing an article specifically about how to teach students how to take notes, because it is such an important vital skill to teach. All right, the fifth bad habit is, I hate this one, misusing Google image search. Students can be distracted by scrolling through the many, many Google image results of their search. They can scroll and scroll and scroll, only to find the further you scroll, the weirder your results get. This is quite entertaining for students and is also a big waste of time. And once students find an image they want, they take it without a second thought of questioning the source. Here are some fixes. only let your students use the Google image search function during designated times. Explain the weirdness and lack of relevance as you scroll further and further through Google images, and warn students against doing this because it just gets weird. Teach copyright and fair use. I have a link to an awesome little video. It's a cartoon video from Common Sense Media that teaches students about copyright and fair use in a really simple, entertaining way. Students should know that it is completely legal for them to use legal, for them to use images in their work because they're using it for educational purposes. This is called fair use. They should know their rights and that even though they aren't required to credit the creator, it's a respectful thing to do. To wrap up, students need to get into the habit of 1, searching using specific questions, 2, clicking through the source of information Google provides for more websites and images, 3, reading articles from actual websites and summarizing learning by taking brief notes that include keywords and ideas. As teachers, in this fast transforming digital world, it is essential we model positive online habits. I hope that this episode has supported you in designing lessons that teach your tech-savvy students how to improve their internet research skills. And then I have another video from a long time ago of me teaching a lesson about researching to 6th graders. So that should be some entertainment for you. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share this podcast with your colleagues. Give me 5 stars if you found this episode or other episodes valuable. And until next time, I love you. Bye.